I hope you've been having a really beautiful day, being with yourself moment by moment, treating yourself really kindly. And before I begin my evening talk, I want to thank those of you who have sent me notes about how you haven't been able to hear much of what we've been saying out here. So thank you for those notes. And apologies to the sound system. It's made trickier because we're Zooming, and so we can't wear a lavalier microphone. So we have to hand hold it. And I'm sure I've drifted away from my chin way many times. So we want you to hear what we're saying. So please, if you can't hear what we're saying, please raise your hand. Let us know right away. Don't wait. I'm glad I got the notes, but they're after the fact. So let us know in the moment, okay? And hopefully we can fix things up. How's this, Lil? Is it okay? Okay, terrific. All right. Oh, up a little bit more? Was that a thumbs up? Up more. Okay. That better? Better? I won't be turning my head to the side while I'm talking. Only looking at you. Okay. All right. Here we go. Good luck to us all. Okay. So, wow, I have to say, we are certainly continuing to live in very challenging times. Don't you think? Whew, my goodness. Yet, casting a look back on the arc of human history, it's clear that there's always been periods where life was better and hopeful, followed by periods of chaos and destruction. And as a species, of course, we hope that we're gradually evolving to live more harmoniously together. But I think it's helpful to have this long view and remember the impermanence of conditions so we can loosen our grip on how we thought things would be right now or should be right now. Still, you know, it's just so painful to see how the world's bullies are spewing fear and destruction, causing terrible wars, so much inequality and injustice, with democracies and Mother Earth in such great peril. And COVID, we know, is still with us. We're probably going to have another big wave coming along with flu and RSV. So really, the grief and fear of this can feel overwhelming at times. There have been mornings when I've awakened not wanting to face the news of the day, actually. Yet, you know, it's vital to stay hopeful to the possibility of enough of us awakening to make a difference. Because despite the appearance that we're separate, we're all connected. We're all part of the whole of existence, affecting each other all the time. So every single one of us matters. In fact, quantum physics now tells us that a particle vibrating from the sound of your voice can affect the molecule inside a star at the edge of the universe instantly. All right. So even though the horrors of war and chaos aren't happening in our own neighborhoods, because we're interconnected, we feel it. There's an ancient metaphor for this called Indra's net that imagines that the structure of the entire universe is a limitless web of connections. Picture a vast net that stretches infinitely in all directions. And in each intersection of the net is a single brilliant jewel. And each jewel is perfectly clear and reflects all the other jewels in the net, the way two mirrors placed opposite each other reflect an image endlessly. The jewel in this metaphor stands for a cell, an atom, or an individual consciousness. And every jewel is intimately connected with all the other jewels in the net. And a change in one jewel means a change, however slight, in all the other jewels. My first spiritual teacher, Rinpoche Dahani Wahu, said, because of this, because of interconnectedness, we each have a spiritual responsibility to create our own happiness. She said this is the single most important way we can each contribute to peace on the planet. This was revolutionary to me at the time. Still is, actually. Creating our own peace and happiness is our spiritual responsibility. So despite the dark forces vying to dominate, how can we create more inner be wise and skillful as it is right now? It truly matters. How can we bring our own minds and hearts into alignment? Jewels that we are. Instead of being ruled by the habits of conditioning. All right. I'm sure my hand's going to wander, women, so I'm going to need your help, okay? All right, so I'm going to ask that question again. How can we bring our own minds and hearts into alignment with the true jewels that we are, instead of being ruled by the habits of our conditioning? Well, one answer is by letting go of busyness and instead resting in being present. Letting go of doing and resting in being. And this may sound counterintuitive or too simple, really, but from the understanding of Buddhist teachings, this is an essential pathway to inner freedom and happiness. Because when we can be present, fully present and aware, we experience our wholeness. We experience being enough. And in being enough, we relax and open to the love, compassion, natural intelligence, and wisdom of our true nature. So I'd like to explore this with you tonight. So what's your relationship to busyness, to doing? Would you describe yourself as a doer, a fixer, someone who keeps her eye on what needs to be done and then does your very best to do it so everyone will be happy and okay? Are you habitually busy? Do you ever feel exhausted or overwhelmed by this? And how do you feel about resting? When was the last time you intentionally rested? I mean, really rested. Is resting appealing? Or does it feel wrong or lazy or even scary? A woman who was about to have a complicated breast surgery the next day told me she was exhausting herself with a huge to-do list of all she had to get done before she'd be ready for the surgery. But fearing she wouldn't get it all done, her anxiety was driving her up the wall and she felt tense all over. But when she paused and brought awareness mindfully into her body and listened for her body's advice, she got the message to set all her lists down and spend the remainder of the day resting deeply. As we processed that message, she admitted that her mind would never have thought of this, but her body's wisdom was compelling. Most of us are likely very attached to doing. I certainly am. After all, it's strongly promoted in our culture. Accomplish, perform, be the best at what you do. If you just work hard enough, you'll achieve your dreams. That's the American fairy tale. So it's hard to get resting and simply being present priority, even though we might sense it be beneficial. It goes against the grain. And of course, obviously, there are things we have to do. This is reality. And we humans are creative beings. So engaging productively in the world can be deeply satisfying. But the tricky and problematic thing is that our sense of self gets so tightly linked to what we do. Isn't it true that to a large extent, we define ourselves by what we do? Our success in life by how well we do it? And beyond actually getting stuff done, we're habitually occupied by thinking about all we have to do. All the planning, rehearsing, strategizing, remembering, and imagining that goes on in our minds. Yet if we look more deeply, we might see that so much of our constant busyness is fueled by the underlying belief that we aren't enough. We strive to do better and more to prove we're enough. But does what we do ever leave us with a lasting sense of being enough? Tara Brach, mindfulness teacher, psychotherapist, author of Radical Acceptance, so that as she was waking up what she calls the trance of unworthiness, with this edict to always do more, that even when she'd done a great job of teaching or received some wonderful feedback about how helpful she'd been, her feeling of being enough would last for maybe 2 minutes before she'd start focusing on what else she needed to do or how to do better next time. Even the most satisfying accomplishments, she said, would seem tainted by ego and therefore weren't spiritual enough. Whatever I was doing, it didn't leave me with an enduring sense of enough, she said. So what's true for you? When you've done something really successfully, even brilliantly, how long does that good enough feeling last before you're on to the next thing? I know for myself, it doesn't last even 2 minutes. Sometimes it's really more like 2 seconds, actually. Though we're brought up with the doctrine that working harder and doing more will bring us assurance we're enough, as women, we get an especially genderized twist on this. From subtle insinuations, dismissals, and discounts to blatant violence inflicted on us, including losing our federally protected right to choose our bodies over an unwanted pregnancy, we get the message that we're less important, less intelligent, less powerful, less worthy, and of less value than men. It gets in us that we don't matter as much. Given the misogynistic messages we internalize from living in this patriarchal capitalistic world, of course we believe we aren't enough. And even though morally we know every single being matters equally, nevertheless, the belief that we don't becomes hardwired in our brains, and we are unknowingly attached to a wounded sense of self. So often deep down, we believe there's something the matter with us, or we're damaged goods, or we're just not how we're supposed to be. So we discount our authentic self and give our power away to others in hopes that they'll validate our worthiness. And this keeps us fruitlessly caught in othering, doing all we can do to try to be perfect, hoping that if we do enough, if we're pleasing enough, good enough, smart enough, kind enough, attractive enough, successful enough, then those important others will accept us and finally we'll feel secure and worthy. Paradoxically, though, bowing to the God of perfection just keeps us trapped in our fears. The more we try to be a self we think we're supposed to be and reject those parts of us we deem unacceptable, the more fragmented, insecure, anxious, and depressed we feel. A woman waking up to these patterns said, "Believing I'm not enough runs my life. I'm constantly trying to prove that I am enough. I have to be perfect at everything. The best dog owner, best friend, best daughter, best employee, best mom, best partner. I'm always striving to do better, and I'm exhausted. I have no time to pause, rest, or reflect. I'm constantly hustling for worthiness. I feel so caught in this, and yet I'm afraid to stop for fear that everything will fall apart." So our wounded, not enough self becomes our ruler, with his endless efforts to dominate and control our experience, and it exhausts and depletes us. Furthermore, we know trying to do things perfectly so others will approve of us and give us security is folly. We can't control how others view us. As wise teachers always say, the ultimate source of security must always come from within ourselves. So, how do we free ourselves from this wrong view and let go of trying and let go of doing to prove our worth? How do we heal our wounded self and find peacefulness and enoughness in simply being our authentic self? How can we shift from believing we're not enough to trusting and knowing we are enough? First, it's helpful to remember the Four Noble Truths, the foundational teachings the Buddha gave to help us understand reality and how we can live in wise relationship to it. The First Noble Truth says, there is suffering in life. Dukkha, the Pali word for it, dukkha. There is a basic unsatisfactoriness due to impermanence. Everything is in the process of changing. Our bodies, our relationships, our world. Everything everywhere is dynamic and pretty much out of our control. Overall, we don't like this. It's hard to accept because we want control. We think we can have it. The second noble truth says what actually creates our suffering with this is the habit of attaching to what we want and resisting what we don't want. We cling to sense pleasures, thinking that what's pleasurable will give us happiness. We attach to our opinions and views, our judgments, assumptions, and expectations about how things should be. But the root cause of all our suffering is attaching to a fixed idea of self. So those conditioned ideas of how we think we're supposed to be and how others should view and treat us. This attachment to self, the ego, reinforces the misunderstanding that we're separate and propels the mind into habits of judging, comparing, and viewing others as threats to our well-being. The third noble truth offers the remedy. We can end our suffering by letting go of what we're clinging to and accept what's actually occurring in this moment. By understanding that everything changes, including ourself, and when we cling to anything that changes, we will suffer, then we're free to live in harmony with the way things actually are. We discover that peace and stability within ourselves is the highest and deepest happiness. Peace and stability within ourselves is the highest and deepest happiness. The fourth noble truth describes the eight qualities for living in alignment with the way things are. Wise view, intention, speech, action, livelihood, effort, concentration, and mindfulness. Through cultivating these eight aspects, we learn to be present, aware, and balanced with life as it is. So all suffering is said to be rooted in attachment to a fixed idea of self, ideas of me constructed by the conditioned mind. And freedom from suffering lies in releasing attachment to this self and instead simply being present and accepting of our direct authentic experience as it is in this very moment. So despite all appearances, there is no permanent me or self that truly exists independently from anything else. Instead, we're composed of a vast array of elements and conditions coming together moment by moment, influenced simultaneously by countless other factors, which are also changing and in process. As depicted in Indra's net, we're interdependent, all part of the total fabric of existence, connected with all the other beings that exist. But we mistakenly cling to a sense of self that's created by that continual stream of perceptions and stories, emotions, memories, and imaginings flowing through our minds. You know this stream of thoughts very well since you've been observing your mind all day, right? Thoughts like, "Oh, that woman over there, she looks so serene. Her mind must be so calm. I can never sit like that. I'm always restless. My mind is so busy. I'm a wreck. Will I ever be calm?" Our minds are quite continuously creating a me who is busy. It spins stories about our lives, what we'll do or say, past events, and fantasies about the future. And believing these stories, we're automatically carried off into them, and we suffer. In contrast to our conditioned belief in a not enough self, the Buddha's teachings say that our unconditioned mind, or our true nature, is always enough. Who we ultimately are is perfect, calm, awake, and the very nature of Buddha. We have an innate basic goodness, a basic intelligence. Ultimately, our consciousness beyond the habits of conditioning is pure awareness. The unconditioned mind, awareness, is said to be stable, luminous, spacious, vast, loving, compassionate, wise, and always here. That's each of our unconditioned minds. It's often likened to the blue sky, which is unchanging and never affected by the weather. Whereas the conditioned mind is like the temporary disturbing weather that rolls in, the clouds and storms and fog. And our habit is to get swept up in the bad weather, the fearful stories, resentments, self-doubt, shame, forgetting that always beyond the temporary unpleasant inner weather is the stable blue sky of our true nature. Our intrinsic purity and spaciousness are simply obscured by our self-clinging thought patterns that become so habitual, we mistake them for our very being. There's a story about a statue of a Buddha. That's a great metaphor for this. You may know of this, but I love this story. For centuries, a clay statue of a large Buddha sat in a temple in Thailand. Year after year, the monks tended faithfully to this statue, fixing cracks in the layers of clay as it dried out in the sun and heat. But one day, when a monk was repairing an especially large crack, he peered into it to see how deep the crack ran, and to his surprise, he saw a reflection. Curious, he pulled off more pieces of the crack and discovered beneath all these layers of clay sat a pure, solid, golden Buddha. When all the clay was removed, the now famous golden Buddha was fully revealed. Just as the monks covered up the beauty of the golden Buddha to protect it from being harmed by invading armies, we unintentionally cover over our innate goodness as we internalize the harmful false beliefs and judgments from the world around us. We unknowingly cover over our gold as we strive for approval, and believing we're separate and deficient, we identify with our coverings, our wounded, not enough self. Yet like the golden Buddha, no matter what happens to us, no matter how many negative habits the mind has, or how much self-doubt or shame we feel, underneath it all, undisturbed and unaffected by this clay of our conditioning, our true nature, our authentic self, is always here, stable, and shining brightly. To me, this view is profound and simple. In our essence, we are enough. We are inherently perfect. But gee, do you find this hard to believe? That you're perfect as you are in this very moment? I remember when I first heard this view, it felt intuitively correct, even though I was firmly locked into a very flawed view of myself that created a lot of anxiety. At the same time, I felt tremendous relief. Something in me felt it as true. But beyond intuition, where's the proof for this? How can we know this is really so? How can we trust this as the ultimate truth of who we are? I began to understand that when we look more deeply, there's actually lots of evidence for this. We can see it in our longings for connection and love. We can see it in our longing for belonging. We can see it in our natural desire to be compassionate and help others. We can see it in our delight in beauty, in our desire to understand reality and find freedom from suffering. We can see it in our longing to know we are enough. All this is our true nature, our basic goodness, our gold shining through. And when we're caught up in an emotional storm cloud, and then we become aware of what's actually happening, we intuitively know the right thing to do. Further proof. We have access to a fundamental intelligence that helps us solve our problems. I'm sure you've experienced this in yourself over and over. But here's an example. A mother of a four-year-old told me her son's boisterousness can sometimes really irritate her, especially when she's tired. And in a recent episode, realizing she was seriously provoked, she paused to breathe several breaths and softly noted, "Here's irritation." In that brief inner pause, she noticed that she was very close to snapping at him, and she knew he'd feel hurt if she yelled at him. And at the same time, she also felt compassion for herself, because it's so hard to be a mom sometimes. As she opened to all that she was aware of, she felt the irritation soften and gradually dissipate. And at the same time, her affection for her son became forefront in her awareness again. This is the simple and immediate power of awareness that's right here when we're present and we pause to realize what we're experiencing. Perhaps our true nature is also apparent in those moments when spontaneously, like from out of the blue, as we say, an insight or a deeper understanding suddenly comes to you. I love these aha moments because there it is, true nature guiding me. I think even just the fact that you're all here this weekend practicing so earnestly reflects your deeper knowing that there's something beyond your separate and isolated self, something vast and sacred to trust and rest in. Let's pause here for a moment. What if you could shed all your insecurities about yourself and fully trust that you're completely enough just as you are right now? What would that be like? Try it on for a second. Freeing? A relief? If you really knew this in your core, wouldn't you relax and feel happier and more content? And then all the energy that's tied up in trying to prove your worth would be available for living in alignment with your deepest values. You would follow your own authentic path of confidence, don't you think? Tara Brach emphatically says that she's discovered that the feeling of being truly enough has absolutely nothing to do with accomplishing, nothing to do with achieving, and it's not at all about trying to be good enough. Rather, she says, the realization of enough is right here in the fullness of awareness, in being completely present, in the tenderness of our open heart, in the silence of listening to life as it is. As I slowly understand these teachings, I'm realizing experiencing our ultimate consciousness, our true nature, is not a special, rare, exalted state. In fact, because it's so ordinary and immediate, it can be hard to recognize. But it's found by simply being aware of what's occurring in this moment. It's knowing what you're experiencing right now, your direct, authentic experience. Aware of feeling yourself sitting here, listening to these words, seeing what you see around you, feeling the body breathing, knowing what you're thinking and feeling. That's it. Awareness is the natural capacity to know, to sense what is. It's effortless presence. It's a quiet consciousness that's observing with warmth and interest the thoughts and emotions, perceptions and reactions that are arising and passing away right now. Awareness holds every experience we have and remains unchanging regardless of what we're experiencing. It can't be improved upon by brilliant thoughts or blissful emotions, and it's unaffected by our most distressed states. Awareness isn't dualistic. We're not aware of this at the exclusion of something else. As teacher Willa Blythe Baker says in her wonderful book, The Wakeful Body, awareness is inclusive. It's panoramic. It includes everything with equanimity. It's stable and spacious and saturates every breath, every cell in the body, every surge of energy and life. Whereas we're often disturbed by and pulled into the parade of thoughts and feelings throwing through the conditioned mind, awareness is the wide open space the parade is marching through. It's the loving witness of the present moment that accommodates everything. In true nature, awareness is selfless. It's not contained by someone who's being aware. It has no fixed identity, and it's not separate from what is experienced. Our innermost being is awareness. It's the essence of who we are. Since awareness isn't something we do, it just is, it can't be cultivated or trained. We have it. Yet we can develop our relationship with it. We can become more familiar with it, trust it, and through this come to truly understand that in our deepest sense, we are enough. How? Not by doing something, but by doing nothing. By non-doing. When we let go of the busyness of doing and trying, and simply allow what we're experiencing to be as it is, awareness moves from the background into the foreground. When we're busy doing, or even thinking about all we have to do and how we'll do it, there's a definite me, a self, a somebody doing this. It's helpful to see the habit of busy self in all the projects the mind imagines. Like, when I get home tonight, I have to be sure to remember to call my Aunt Judy. Or when the retreat is over, I'll finally start exercising. And maybe till I have the difficult conversation I've been avoiding for so long. We miss so much of reality when we're caught up in being busy. But when we stop doing, pause, and open to what we're actually experiencing with our whole being, the idea of self quite naturally falls away in those moments. Like, oh, this gorgeous sunrise, this beautiful snowfall, this feeling of hunger, this sound of quiet, this feeling of walking. Each time we pause and rest fully in awareness, we're free from clinging to an idea of self. Self-consciousness vanishes temporarily. Instead, we might feel a sense of completeness, wholeness, or contentment. Maybe even a moment of enough, even though brief. Here on retreat, we have the rare opportunity to switch from doing to being for an extended time. There's really nothing to do here except be present, moment by moment. This is the seamlessness of attention we're practicing that I mentioned this morning. And the refuge of noble silence is a wonderful aid because it frees us from those habits of needing to show ourselves to others in any way. We can let go of worrying about what they might be thinking of us and relax with ourselves as we are. You can rest deeply here. So when you're walking, simply be aware of the physical experience of walking. And when attention wanders away into thinking, as soon as you notice this, see how awareness gently shepherds you back to the experience of walking. When you're drinking a cup of tea, or washing your hands, or eating your lunch, or looking out the window, simply be aware of what you're truly experiencing. Meditation, of course, certainly nurtures our relationship with this innermost aspect of our being. And even though we often come to the spiritual path because we're unhappy and looking for relief, it's good to remember that meditation isn't a rehabilitation project. It's not about fixing ourselves. It's really a practice of deconstruction. We're letting go of struggling against our experience and trying to make this moment better. We're letting go of doing. We're not trying to be something or someone when we meditate. We're simply fully present and allowing things to be as they are. As we meditate, we observe whatever's predominant in the moment. The sensations of breathing, hearing a sound, recognizing a story arising in the mind, feeling a sensation in the body, sensing an emotion arising. We observe this without resisting, without getting pulled into the content or adding on to it with more stories and thoughts. We're accepting it as it is, letting it be, relating to it with curiosity and kindness, and without identifying with it. In this way, we witness how experiences arise and change as they do, moment by moment. When we're present in this way, resting in awareness, this inner quiet and spaciousness allows room for the natural qualities of who we really are, our love, compassion, and wisdom, to arise. This helps loosen our attachment to a fixed idea of self, and at the same time enhances the sense of being truly home and enough. Mingar Rinpoche, teacher, author, and founder of the Turgar Meditation Community, offers this meditation instruction to help us become more familiar with our true home. He says, "Every now and then as you're meditating, drop even the breath as home base and just completely be. Don't control your attention in any way. Think of awareness as the sky itself. You don't need to do anything to calm the mind. Awareness is already calm. Whatever thoughts and feelings arise can just be left as they are. Simply let them all be there and notice that awareness is also there too. Being aware of awareness is enough." I find that these moments of meditation can be moments of deep quiet and calm. Everything slows down. It can be an expansive stillness that affectionately observes whatever's predominant. There's no running after, no entanglement, no need to do anything. Peaceful, stable, complete, enough. But see what's true for you as you practice. Because the natural intelligence of our conditioned mind is always here, anytime we're pulled into a difficult mind state, it's great to know that awareness is our instant ally. Within that inner space, we can square up to what's really happening, see how we're caught up in ideas about ourselves, and in that process, the wisdom of our true nature can beam through. Here's a recent experience I had with this. Several times over this past summer, I found myself feeling glum and discontent. I did my best to act like I was happy, and for quite a while, I avoided paying attention to this, even in meditation. I assumed my dim mood was due to a slow recovery from a recent painful back injury. But finally, in one sit, the unpleasantness of this, the unpleasant feeling tone of that, was too big to ignore. I couldn't resist it any longer. So I intentionally turned toward this state and invited myself to get really curious. I wanted to know what stories my mind was running, what the sensations of this were in my body, and what belief about myself was at the bottom of this discontent. So first I connected with the breath and encouraged myself to just relax with these sensations. I invited the field of my awareness to open up more, become more spacious like the sky, and to let everything just be as it is. Pretty quickly, I felt some tension easing, as if my inner atmosphere was becoming a little bit lighter and softer. And after a few minutes of resting with this, it suddenly dawned on me, like out of the blue, that what I was feeling was not glum, but dread. Dread. And this really surprised me, that I was feeling dread. As I opened to this, I realized my mind was telling stories about how my body is getting older or fragile, takes longer to heal now. I worried now that my lower back would always bother me. I saw imaginings of feeling sharp pain in upcoming dental appointments and a very young mayor really terrified of that. I pictured our country and democracy going down the tubes, imaginings of more violence, and women being more oppressed, not less. And the work I'm so passionate about becoming futile. Spotting these stories, I thought, well, gee, no wonder I'm feeling dread, right? Then I shifted my awareness to where I felt the effect of these stories in my body. I realized my whole heart area, chest area, and belly felt really tight, rigid, heavy, kind of sunken. I encouraged myself to open to these sensations with gentleness, giving them lots of space to let them be just as they were. And as I held all of this spaciously in awareness, I saw how these stories created in me a mare who would continue to suffer long into the future. I realized that underneath it all was the belief that this self, this future mare, would be overwhelmed by these conditions and wouldn't be strong enough to handle them. That was what was at the bottom of this. Realizing all of this transformed my relationship to dread instantly. It became my teacher. I realized I'd been attached to an idea of mare who wasn't brave enough to face what may well be difficult challenges ahead. Yet when I questioned that belief, I recalled times in my actual life when I had been strong and did handle what was very difficult. So from that moment on, when even a small whiff of dread would arise, I'd turn towards it, softly note, here's dread. Feel my body breathing. Spot the imaginings of an incapable, not enough self. And soften around the sensations of this in my body. After a bit, the unpleasant sensations would gently dissipate, and there was nothing I needed to do except remember the truth. In this moment, I'm enough. I can trust myself to handle whatever arises. So thank you, true nature. And because our sense of self is so tied into the roles we play, we often unknowingly are trapped in the responsibilities and duties of these roles. We may act out of these identities and impose our assumptions and expectations on others instead of being really present and aware of what's actually happening. This can lead to hurt, disappointment, resentment, and certainly conflict. A woman in the practice circle described a situation where her adult daughter asked for her help in moving to a new apartment. Knowing things could get tense between the two of them, and knowing that as mom, she could be controlling and attached to her way of doing things, she decided on the flight out there to drop her mother knows best attitude and just practice being present and open with her daughter. She wanted to simply support her daughter taking the lead this time. Though the moving was chaotic and a lot of things didn't get done the way she would have done them, she said it was the best visit they ever had. They laughed in ways they hadn't in years, and her daughter was really grateful for her help. On the flight home, she realized by dropping her usual role and simply being aware and open, she'd been relaxed, flexible, and spontaneous. And best of all, she felt like she'd truly been herself. She'd been enough. When we let go of these old ideas of how we're supposed to be, and instead become aware of what we're actually experiencing in this moment, we find freedom. We find our open heart, our flexibility, our creativity, compassion, our wisdom, and our happiness. And we see that our effect on others is beneficial too. Further proof that our true nature, who we really are, is always here and trustworthy. Clearly, to heal our relationship with ourselves, we need to wake up to the misogynistic beliefs we've internalized and understand we are enough. We need to realize that we are not the stories, beliefs, and reactions clouded by the conditioned mind. These are the insubstantial clouds temporarily covering over our true nature. We need to switch our allegiance from the clouds of a non-enough self to aligning with the clarity and wisdom of our authentic true self. So let's take on the practice of non-doing while we're here together, deliberately stopping and resting, and simply be present with what we're experiencing in the moment. Hearing the wind, maybe, feeling a snowflake landing on your cheek, tasting the flavor of the tea you're drinking, seeing the vastness of the stars. Let's intentionally rest in our senses and cultivate our relationship with the self we can really trust. As you enjoy these moments of wholeness, see if the sense of self recedes into the background. Notice if this is a sense of being enough in that moment. And whenever you feel the tension of busyness, the urge to do something, or you hear the mind delivering a should, I should check my phone, I should find out how so-and-so is doing, pause and breathe and turn towards yourself with your open, loving heart. Ask yourself, what am I experiencing right now? And what me, what self has the mind just created? And what does this feel like in my body? Get curious and notice all you notice with lots of tenderness. And notice how this urge to do affects your well-being. Do you feel more peaceful or less? More relaxed or tense? Then gently encourage yourself to let that urge go. Feel your body breathing a breath or two and choose resting in awareness instead. You might even ask, what would be a wise and kind way to respond to myself with this? And listen deeply to your own wisdom. Be grateful you're realizing this and remind yourself you are enough, just as you are in this moment. By choosing to rest in awareness, we can gradually understand we aren't the busy, not enough, wounded self we've been hooked on all these years. We're the one who is aware, open, fluid, knowing just what's happening right now, and free from any fixed idea of self. This is deep inner work and may well be a lifelong practice since these neural grooves run so deeply in our brains. And the external world clearly isn't rejecting sexism and patriarchy anytime soon, right? And also, this takes courage and lots of self-compassion since we're going against the grain of our gender conditioning. But it's deeply freeing because we're taking full spiritual responsibility for our own happiness. So let's help the world by remembering the love and wisdom and compassion of our authentic self. Let's deepen our trust in our innate wholeness by resting in the enoughness of simply being present rather than being so caught in the busyness of doing. In this way, the divine jewels that we are will shine brilliantly out to all the other jewels in our limitless, interconnected world. By trusting that in our essence we are enough, we release our self-consciousness and can be present in ways that ripple out to truly benefit everyone and everything. I want to end with a poem entitled Awareness. Awareness. Her gaze is so constant, our every move watched with such affection, a ceaseless vigil without condition or agenda, silent, patient, unrelenting in her embrace. There is endless room in the heart of this lover, infinite space for whatever foolishness we may toss her way. But she is also crafty, this one, a thief who will steal away everything we've ever cherished, all our beliefs, all our philosophies, until nothing is left but her shimmering wakefulness, this simple love for what is. Let's just sit for a couple of moments together. Thank you. And now we have a walking meditation, and then 8 o'clock, our last practice of the day, guided loving kindness practice. Have a beautiful walk.